Marcia Rader Brantley disappeared in the spring of 2009, and her husband did not report her missing. It was not until her hairdresser intervened that authorities began investigating Marcia's disappearance. 12 years later, no one has seen or heard from her. Let me start off today by asking you a question. Do you have a relationship where you feel as if you are doing more work than the other person? It's up to you to set up times to get together. It's your job to help this other person, even though they don't seem to reciprocate when you need a hand. It's up to you to apologize after a fight, even if you're not the one in the wrong. These kinds of relationships are a lot of work. They can be tiring because we have to put in so much effort. We have to convince ourselves that it's okay for us to do more work. After all, I have more free time than my friend does, so it's only right that I'm the one who has to plan everything. Indications are that Marcia was the one who invested the emotional labor in her relationship with Donnie, and by 2009, she was exhausted. Welcome to Targeted, True Crime Podcast. We tell stories of those who were targeted by abuse and investigate cases of family violence using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. As we've discussed in earlier episodes, at first Marcia seems to be an unlikely victim of domestic violence, as she doesn't neatly fit into the well-known risk categories. She does match as a high-risk individual for emotional abuse, however, because she had higher education and job prestige than her husband, which also carries that increased risk for deadly violence. We've also discussed cognitive dissonance and established how Marcia engaged in cognitive clarifications in order to offer herself kind of a version of pep talks. We saw in her journal how her husband Donnie had become increasingly absent, and she no longer used couple words such as us or we. There's one more set of academic literature I want to discuss in this vein, although this one will be fairly brief. I want to talk about emotional labor and how this might have impacted Marcia and her relationship. Emotional labor is a concept developed by researchers to study people in the workplace. It examines how workers have to regulate their emotions in order to only display those emotions that are considered appropriate by where they work. Doctors Morris and Feldman define emotional labor as the, quote, effort, planning, and control needed to express organizationally desired emotions. To put it in a little bit easier terms to understand, I'm going to turn to how the authors of an article called Emotional Labor and Emotional Exhaustion put it. They said, quote,
some occupations may require an employee to pretend to have emotions that they do not really have, or to actually experience required emotions,
unquote. For instance, salespeople have to hide feelings of anger or sadness and exude happiness or optimism. Even if the customer says something offensive to them, the salesperson swallows back a biting reproof and may offer a gentle laugh instead. There is a degree of acting that happens in order to perform this emotional labor. Those who are successful in the workplace tend to engage in deep acting as opposed to surface-level acting. Deep acting requires more work, and it benefits from a level of cognitive clarification in which the person convinces themselves to change the emotions they're feeling. In our example of the salesperson, they'll do better if they've convinced themselves that their main goal is to make the customer happy. So they'll tell themselves not to worry about what a customer says or does. It is a triumph if I respond with a smile and charm the customer in any circumstance. By convincing themselves to change their emotional response to the offensive customer, they're more likely to have success at work. Otherwise, they'd just be slapping on a fake smile, but on the inside, they would still be rolling their eyes or snarling. The customer would probably perceive the fake surface-level acting and wouldn't be impressed. But the deep acting is likely to create more of a good impression to the customer, who will respond positively, thus making the salesperson feel rewarded for their work. Certain professions are known for requiring more emotional labor than others, which affects the well-being of the worker. The more emotional labor we must perform, the more we suffer. Anyone who works in customer service or medical care often have a high degree of emotional labor. I worked as a waitress many, many years ago during the summers, and man, that was one of the hardest jobs I have ever had to do. The emotional labor was intense in it. In the past 20 years or so, there have been a number of studies that track the increased amount of emotional labor necessary for those who work at colleges. Since students and their parents have become more of customers rather than simply those who need to be educated or trained. In some ways, college staff learn that it's more important to keep their customers happy than it is to teach them. Marcia worked at a university at the time this change in higher education was happening. And since she worked with students full-time, she probably had to use a significant amount of emotional labor. Imagine, she not only worked during the day while she was a resident director, but she also lived in the dorm and often had to work until 10 or 11 at night. Her acting had to be extended for much of that day in which she was dealing with her customers, also known as the students who lived in her dorm. Evidently, she did it well. Although the people who worked with her acknowledged the stress Marcia felt working in the dorms, the students didn't. I've heard from many women who lived in Marcia's dorm, and they perceived her as a friend and a mentor. Marcia was skilled enough not to let them see the work she had to do emotionally when confronted with problems created by students. Likely, Marcia was able to deep act by convincing herself of the inherent value of making sure her students were happy, as opposed to simply pretending that their happiness was important. There might have been some surface-level acting, I imagine, though. I heard that Marcia did let the mask slip occasionally when she was with her peers or coworkers, but she kept it in place while with students. I bring all this up because I think it influenced Marcia's response to emotional labor in her relationship as well. While most research on emotional labor involves organizations and their workers, the past few years have seen interpersonal communication scholars adapting the ideas to analyze relationships. The one that inspired me was written by Benson, Cavallo, and Delgita in 2020. They looked at romantic relationships and adapted the workplace theory of emotional labor to discover what levels of acting created greater satisfaction. They discovered that what worked best was when one person was a deep actor and the other was a non-actor. So we have one person who is actively trying to change the emotions they're feeling, that's the deep actor, and one who isn't acting at all, but simply accepting or expressing the emotions they feel. I think this is a situation for Marcia and Donnie. Marcia was a deep actor. She used cognitive clarification to help shift her emotional responses, and the amount of emotional labor this would take would be incredible. I think Donnie was a non-actor. He simply felt what he felt. Once someone is not able to engage in deep acting anymore, they have to choose how they're going to respond instead. Will they leave the relationship or will they try other coping mechanisms? In a romantic relationship, many might try to continue by using surface-level acting, which is more like pretending if they no longer can do the deep acting. The relationship study I mentioned earlier found that surface-level acting was not effective. Throwing surface-level acting into the relationship even made things worse, negating the benefits of deep acting. Surface-level acting tended to make the cost of emotional labor greater, while also lowering the benefit of it. In other words, if Marcia had spent years, nearly a decade, of deep acting in which she's cognitively convincing herself about appropriate emotional responses she should have, all that effort becomes flaccid when she adds surface-level acting to the mix because she just can't make herself believe that what Donnie is doing now is okay. She's still trying, she's still putting in enormous effort, but it has less of a positive impact. This all leads to emotional exhaustion in which a person simply cannot continue as before. It's as if she were biking on a long-distance course. While earlier rounds had hills and valleys and plateaus, now there's only a mountain with a steady, inexorable upward path. Marcia could not continue. This was a marriage in crisis, and both of them probably knew it. Marcia was still trying to work through it, but if she wasn't able to convince herself through deep acting, then it wasn't helping like she thought it would. If she suspected Donnie was cheating, there was no way that Marcia could have used cognitive clarification or deep acting to change her response to that. If she now saw Donnie as a money-sucking leech who was financially ruining her, she could not have changed her emotional response. She could pretend and do surface-level acting, but Donnie would see through that and it would not be effective. Donnie is no longer the hero that Marcia had been treasuring and holding up as special for all those years. For someone in Donnie's position, this sort of shift might simply mean leaving the relationship. But what if he's a covert narcissist? It might not be that easy. Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted True Crime Podcast. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. If you want to connect on social media, I'll include links in the show notes. If you'd like to reach me via email, you can do that at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Please stay tuned for promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is a survivor of domestic violence, you are not alone. There are resources available to you. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a few organizations. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, so I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. Getting help may be the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.
It is written, the meek shall inherit the earth, but not on my watch. I am King Asylus. I wasn't born to be a king, but America needed something democracy could no longer give her. And so, like a chess master, I made my moves with anticipation and bravado. This is not just my story. nor simply about my rise to power. This is a story about our world and the monsters that control governments. What happens when the monsters cannot control me? The Rise of King Asylus. Listen on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Visit theriseofkingasylus.com.